Right. We've gone over history in large part to see what doesn't work. We know that it's not going to be efficient and effective to figure that the employees are bad people trying to gyp the company, and so we're going to clamp down on them and make them work harder, et cetera, et cetera. That kind of versus relationship that I call it before is the kind of thing that creates inefficiencies that allows foreign competition to do better than we can do at marketing and selling products, et cetera. So we're sort of getting to the point where we begin to realize that working with employees efficiently and effectively is a survival technique, amongst other things. So we got to the point where we were here at time one, the organization, and we're going, of course, out here once again to get to that goal. And from a human resources strategy point of view, we need to help the company move, from a human resources point of view at least, move from time one to time two over here. And basically we're talking about two major considerations in the fulfillment of a goal from a human resources point of view. What's one thing that we might need to change? What's another thing that we might need to change? What do you think? If the dean walked in the room now and told me that I had to teach an econ class, what would I have to do? Yeah, really. First I'd have to, never could figure out what those people were talking about.
Learn economics.
Hmm?
Learn economics.
I'd have to learn, I'd have to change my skills, right? So we're talking about here, change skills. That's one thing that we have to do. And what's another thing that we have to do? We might have to do, depending on what the goal is. Over here, we have X number of employees. So?
You may have to adjust the number of employees.
Right, up or down. So we may have to exit, you know, jettison, or we may have to hire. So we may have to fire or let go, however you want to say it, or hire. We already know, didn't we talk about internal and external stuff? I forget. On the hiring aspect, we can do internal hiring and external. Well, look at all the incredible confusion that can take place here. First, if we're changing skills, we better know a lot about the skills that the employees have here. The employee skills here, our existing skill pool, right? The pool of skills that we have with us now. And of course, we're going to have to understand the jobs here that we're going to hire for or replace into, right? And those skills, so that we can look and see whether or not they're comparable skills that we have here versus the skills that we need over there, which in and of itself is a major factor to try and come together. How do we put together this kind of inventory, skills inventory, of what we have now? Interesting thought. We would have to take apart each of the jobs that our employees are doing to look at the skills that are required by their current jobs. And then see if they translate to these jobs out here. It might be the same job, but then again, it might not be. And in this day and age, with how things are, there's a good chance the jobs are going to be substantially different. We think of some.
Well, I just had a question. In
sure.
Most categories, when you're manufacturing a good, yes, your jobs are going to change, but they wouldn't change that drastically, I wouldn't think. Because it wouldn't be like if you make phones, you wouldn't start making
tools.
We'll
talk generically about the global situation. We're not making many phones here in the U.S., obviously. But what are we talking about here? Here is a job now. If I had to say to you, what's that job going to look like in the future, which could be within a year, what's that job going to look like? If it's not going to be the same, what's it going to be?
Better or worse?
Pardon?
Better or worse?
But not in terms of value, in terms of what's being done and how it's being done. Pardon? Sure. And what would be your tendency to say how it will be different? We're probably going to do a lot more pick and shovel work. The men are going to be out there and the women are going to be out there with shovels digging holes and making fence posts by hand and putting them in the ground and stuff. Is that the kind of change we're going to see in any particular job? What's happening to college professor jobs, for example? And I lack, not only lack skill, but I lack any interest at all in doing that. So I'd be the wrong employee to put in line for teaching online. In fact, I won't do it. So the good part is that I've been here long enough that I don't have to worry about it. So teaching, the idea of teaching online is an anathema to me. I want people here, a captive audience. They have to laugh when I tell a joke, and I can see when they're falling asleep, et cetera, et cetera. I slept through 2 years of college, by the way. So I understand. But what we're looking here is that jobs are going to change, and most likely they're going to be changed heavily due to communications infrastructure that we have. I mean, you know, Jody says to me, do we really need to have everything that you can do on that cell phone? Oh, by the way, check the weather for me, would you? What's up? Are you going to have to buy a new wheelbarrow? I said, yeah, I have three. I need another one. I need another wheelbarrow. She said, check Craigslist. You know, it's all day long like that. And then the end of the day, she'll say, do we really need it? My God, it's unbelievable. Even being just a husband has changed, you know? Not enough just to have gigantic muscles and be able to dig a hole. You have to be able to find all this stuff and access all this information, etc. How much money do we have in a checking account? Bang, it's there. You know, it's amazing. So this job has changed. Certainly professors have changed. Is it going to be that these jobs are going to change during this period of time? There's a good chance that they are. And that this job here, even if a person has particular skills and is doing the same title job now, may not translate to what these jobs are out here in terms of technical skills and the changes in technology.
So, like, you always use the ditch digger.
Right.
So, in this case, this year our ditch diggers are using picks and shovels, but next year we'll be able to afford a backhoe so we can lay off. But we got.
Or maybe that'll be a requirement. They'll have a new miniature. It's an app for your cell phone that digs ditches, you know, and you push a button and all of a sudden this red laser shoots out of the front of your phone and puts a ditch in, for all the hell I know. I mean, none of this is science fiction anymore. So the ditch digging app, you know, so maybe that's what's going to happen. Would I be surprised to see a laser digging holes in the next 10 years? No, I would not. Pardon?
We have a phone, I'd be concerned other than that.
Yeah.
I don't want your answer.
I'm on the first floor in the little finance class.
Right. And then we can have one of those things where you invite 7-year-old, 9-year-old kids in and have hamburgers and laser training, right?
Oh, how does this work?
Boom, boom, you know. Killing all the instructors. So.
Oh, God.
So I'm just saying, the changes here, we're always in the middle of them, right? And, I mean, you just see it. It's just remarkable. Anyway, so we need to understand what the technology might be on these new jobs that we have out here that these people are not going to be able to deal with. They're not interested in dealing with them. I don't want to do online courses, et cetera. Okay, so there's a lot of awareness here of what's going to happen. And if we do hire our existing skilled, then we have to try to do the necessary making changes in these people to have them fit into this job. And as we did, we talked about the idea that this builds, you know, morale, and people are excited about the opportunity of changing with the company, and et cetera, et cetera. So there's a lot of, we talked about the value of internal hiring, I hope. But it's a complicated process, guessing what these jobs are going to be like, you know, 6 months, let's say, from now. What are the skills that are going to be necessary? Did I tell you about MicroVision already?
No.
I believe in investing, and I have a lot of investments, but I believe in having at least one, which is a total wild-ass guess. It's like a gambling company. You know, like a gamble that you can use as sort of to solve your gambling need. And mine is in this company called MVIS, MicroVision. And what they make is laser projectors. Tiny, tiny, tiny little laser projectors, which at this point now can fit into tablets, laptops, and also into cell phones. So when you want to show a picture or a video or whatever, you just turn it on and show it on the wall, and there it is. And it's laser-driven, so it doesn't have to be adjusted. The focus doesn't have to be adjusted. Sounds pretty cool, doesn't it? If you're going to take a gamble on a stock, why not? It's been sitting at $2 for about the last 5 years. Of course, I bought it at $3.50. So, waiting for it. My brother bailed. My brother got me into it. He's the, unbelievable. But anyway, he bailed, 6 months ago. I did. His basis was $9. Anyway, so my point is about MicroVision is that they have a product that seems really cool, but that's not where they're making their money. You know, their money is starting to come from heads-up displays in cars. So you have a box over the top of your head that has this laser projector in it that projects onto the windshield, at the base of the windshield. So all your gauges are on the base of your windshield. And you don't like the speedometers in the center, you just change it, move it over to the left, and move your gas gauge to the right. Whatever you want to do, it's just all projected right across. And a bunch of cars have at least expressed interest in it. We'll see. You know, if I come in with a wheelbarrow load of money and start throwing it at the students, you'll know that it's done really well. MicroVision finally paid off after all these years. Right, we'll see.
How long have you been in it?
5 years. So we're waiting. It was at 64 at one point.
Holy crap.
And then some people took a beating. In fact, it went down to 25 cents at one point. So yeah, it's been a rough road for people that want to hang on to it. But my point with that is just the changes, you know, the changes of this kind of thing in your cars and you have to be comfortable with the technology. All right, so that's all this internal stuff. And how about external? This is the idea of not making, but buying a particular skill, which has its positive points too. You're buying people that have the skills that are associated with that future job. Sure, you don't get that morale enhancement, but you do get people who are the latest in that kind of skill.
Can't that be broken into two areas, subcontracting and actual hire for your company?
Technically, you could.
Okay.
I mean, temp employees, all that kind of stuff.
Okay.
It's all subcontracting type of thing. But in terms of buying, what's the risk associated with buying people?
You don't know them.
You don't know them. They don't know the company, more importantly. They don't know the company and, you know, how things are done, right? What else?
If you already bought them, somebody else could probably buy them, too.
Yeah, very much so, and particularly that ends up creating employees that could be very, it begins with an E, extroverted, no, extraneous, no, elephantine, no, very what?
Expensive.
Yes, very expensive, exactly, because there's people that want to do them, and back a few 5-8 years ago when there's the big Silicon Valley push to get all the young computer people out there when they were worried about the 2000. All the computers are going to blow up at the stroke of the year 2000, right, the Y2K panic. They were hiring young folks with incredibly good pay plus a lease to a BMW convertible. Young people want convertibles, right? Older people know that convertibles cause skin cancer.
Though I had my share of convertibles, that's for sure. So there was an attempt to bring people in. That gets expensive. So if you want people with the latest skills to come in and take these jobs, you have to buy them, but you have to pay the market price for these people, or at least provide for them to think that they're getting the market price. You know, future, you can get stock in our company or whatever, which obviously can pay off. So how is that going to work? It's going to work that the company needs to make a decision here about what's the cost-effective way of getting the skills that they need. Can they make them? Do they have to buy them? Etc. And in either case, as they start bringing these people in, they need to know everything about this job so we have complete knowledge of the job, through a process known as job analysis. We'll talk about it for a little bit today. The idea of job analysis. So that's important. Also, we need to know all the legal ramifications that are associated with this. Legal issues. Pay issues. Pay/benefit issues. Various health and safety issues. So there's a whole shipload of stuff that we need to be aware of. And it ain't simple. Because any one of these things messed up is obviously going to make it difficult for the company to proceed efficiently. So if they do something that's going to a hire that appears to be illegally discriminatory, based on some protected group, it could easily end up in an expensive lawsuit if it's not done correctly. All that has to be done. And so what we're going to do then is to create this job analysis, and then the job analysis is going to supply the details with which we then hire qualified applicants. So the job analysis not only gets us the best employees, but it also to CYA legally. Most importantly is it gets your best employees, but it also makes sure you stay out of trouble if the law comes and says, you know, why did you hire this person? You've hired way too many, some protected group but not the other half of that protected group. Way too many men but not enough women. Or way too many women and not enough men. Or whatever. And so from a legal point of view, it's extremely important as well.
What is CYA?
Cover your ass.
Cover your, should I have said R? See, cover your rear. Would that have been better? So that's the performance appraisal then really, really, really is a super important document from the point of view of making sure we're doing everything to getting skilled people and also to cover ourselves legally. Also, if we make decisions based on what the job requires and we can show that we've hired based on what the job requires, the morale with our existing employees, comes out better. Instead of them saying, how come we didn't get those new jobs, we can say, because this is what the job required, and we didn't find anybody who met those qualifications. And in order to teach them the necessary computer issues associated with this job would have cost us too much. I mean, is there any possibility that the job that my son got sitting on the back porch keeping 500 computers running, is there any possibility using a cell phone to do that and writing necessary backup programming for these computers, is there really any possibility that somebody over 35 could have gotten that job? There's no way at all. So if they screened a bunch of people and they only hired young people, it's going to look like an it's going to look like it's going to be age discrimination employment, like ADEA. And they can have tests, you know, how would you do this, how would you do that, and the results are going to be the same, that they're not going to be able to find somebody older that can do this kind of job, especially when playing golf, which is an important, evidently, criteria. By the way, if you haven't taken up a hobby, I strongly recommend golf. He's gotten all kinds of company exposure due to the fact that he's a pretty good golfer by now. So it definitely does work. You do meet the most important people on the golf course. So anyway, all of these things, right, tie into this idea of doing the job analysis. So let me talk to you for a few minutes about that, because it's so crucial to everything that we do on out. If you're going to fire somebody, let's say you fire somebody for poor performance, and they say, why did you fire me? Well, I'm taking you to court. You fired me because I'm a protected group, and you're getting rid of people that are older or whatever. What's the company going to say? No, we fired you because... I guess that would be pretty close in a nutshell, but you would have to say, because you can't do the job. And they would say, yes, I can do the job. Sure, I can. And you'd pull out the performance appraisal, which is based on the job analysis, because the job analysis is going to give you the important aspects of the job, not only for hiring, but also for performance appraisal. And then you could say, here's what the performance appraisal says about you on these key issues of the job that we've gotten out of the job analysis. And you have scored mediocre to miserable on these important criteria. So it's a backup, legal backup, along with an efficiency backup as well. So that job analysis then is to getting skilled employees to cover ourselves legally on why we're doing what we're doing, but it also serves as the basis for the performance appraisal. We're going to measure our employees against important components of the job that we found in the job analysis. For our terminations coming out of that. So it becomes a crucial document. And let me forewarn you, this late in the afternoon, there's going to be a lot of people falling asleep over the next 10 or 15 minutes. But try to hang in there, because it's important. Yes, it'll all be on the recording for you to listen to, but it'll probably put you to sleep then as well. So be careful. I can't help it. What can I tell you? I felt once kept falling asleep in this management science class I had with Ernie Houck at Virginia Tech. He got into the stuff about the just-in-time inventory. Boring. That's the worst. It's an MBA program. So he knew I was sleeping through. So guess what the final was? Just up like pages of this crap. Oh, well, I didn't want to be that kind of person anyway. So what the heck? He gave me the lowest possible grade you can get in a graduate class, like a B-, whatever. All right, so job analysis here. Job analysis then gets at the root of what a job is. It is indeed an analysis of a job, surprisingly enough. Yeah, who would have thunk it? It's an analysis of a job. How many of you have Netflix? My wife and I are watching this series from Australia. Anything from Australia is going to be good. This series is called Rake, R-A-K-E. I haven't heard of it, but my advice would be you should listen to tape. I'm not going to say don't listen to tape, but also entertain yourself incredibly.
What's it about?
He's a lawyer in Australia, but he's like they said, they've lowered the bar. You have to pass the bar. They've lowered the bar to a new low. He's a pretty sort of, I won't say sleazy. He does a really good job, but he's sort of weird. His first case is defending a guy who's a cannibal. And
what?
It's funny.
What?
The first case he has to the first that we see, he's defending a guy who's a cannibal. But in evidently in this part of Australia, there's no law against being from eating people.
The Aborigines.
Maybe. But also the guy was dead at the time, and he said he wanted to be eaten. He has a video. I want to be eaten. Right? It was an interesting show. Just watch the first episode, then we can talk about it. It's pretty funny in a weird way. Job analysis, then, is collecting the data about our job. So let's say we have a focus job. Focus on a job and gather info. How would you gather info? Go online, Dr. Fox. He's the answer to everything now. How would we gather data about a job that we're currently doing?
Talk to the people that are doing the job.
Well, job incumbents. Job incumbent info.
Their superiors?
Which are called terminology here, folks. Who's the superior to the job incumbent?
Professors. Professors are always superior.
Who in this case? Begins with an S. It's not Superman, it's super...
Supervisor.
Sharp crowd.
Short buzz.
Pardon?
Did you say short bus?
Short bus? What?
Did you just say short bus?
Short bus?
Yeah.
I said sharp crowd.
Oh, man.
I forget what I said. It's all on tape. Something to insult you on an afternoon to keep you awake. Dr. Fox made us mad so we'd stay awake. Okay. Who else could you get information from, or how else could you get information? I'll start you off with an O. That doesn't help.
On the job.
Operation?
Like I'm at the OB
observation.
Now.
Observation.
Huh?
Observation.
Observation! I feel like Vanna White. I probably just look just like me too. Observation! That would be one. What else could we do?
I knew someone that would do like mock calls to the people, to the company, and say like, hey, I want to come in for a job interview, like, what are you looking for? Can I sit with us? Yeah.
I have to boil that down.
Internal cold calling.
Yeah, cold calling.
I'm not sure. We could check with that, sure, I guess.
Yeah, if you have the freedom to do it.
Yeah, I guess. I'm not sure how it would work. I want to gather information from the job incumbents, supervisors, and by observation, but I'm not sure about how the telephone fits in this.
What about if you were talking to, like, the people, if you were putting a new machine or something, the companies that are installing it?
I haven't thought about it. In 25 years, I haven't thought about it.
Okay.
That's not where you do well. What else can I do about this? How about if I gave the job incumbent a questionnaire?
Would that not just be the first place?
That's not the same as asking them, you know, having a job, you know, interview with them, talking about it. Because with the written one, which is called Position Analysis Questionnaire, PAQ, you have a position that you want to ask questions about. That form is the same for all jobs. You just write at the top, it's for this particular job, you hand it out, and there's about a couple hundred questions, and they answer the questions about the job. How often do you interact with other employees? Does your supervisor tell you whether or not your output is good or bad, et cetera, et cetera? So there's a lot of questions to sort of define what the job is. We can have a workplace diary where people write down what they're thinking about, which is excellent for when you can't observe what they're doing. You get
suggestion box.
That's usually for how to improve a job. But you could, I guess you could have people, well, that would be this diary thing and the questionnaires. Keep going. We could check with other organizations, right? Other orgs, et cetera, to find out what their jobs are like and how they do them. Maybe even get Dictionary of Occupational Titles, the DOT.
the Dictionary of Occupational Titles supplies you with a brief description of roughly 30,000 different jobs. So chances are you're going to have some information in there that might be useful. Essentially, it's a job description of every 30,000 different jobs. So we can gather a bunch of information from a number of people. Now, in terms of the people who are doing the job currently, these people here, the supervisors, we want to ask as many people as possible because more information is better. If you ask just two or three people, maybe they have particular biases and this and that that aren't realistically part of the job. So you need to ask as many as possible here in order to put together a more accurate, this helps to increase our accuracy, the accuracy of our information. Also, I might add, just parenthetically here, that the more people you ask, the more buy-in you're going to get. If you make decisions based on this job analysis and people have contributed to the job analysis, then they tend to believe it's more accurate than if they never had the opportunity to contribute. So you want to get as much information going so you can get buy-in here. They believe in it. They know that the job analysis is going to impact jobs they get in the future, the pay they get, the performance appraisal that's going to be used with them, et cetera, et cetera. So they know it's extremely important to their own lives, and so they're going to want to be involved in it. So that's important. But on the other hand, these two people offer substantial risk. What's the risk associated with bringing in information from the job incumbent supervisor, et cetera, into the job analysis? What might it be? Biases, and what kind of bias in particular? Both the job incumbent and the supervisor are going to supply you with information that makes them
look good.
Thank you. So, yeah, I'm just a janitor here and I sweep up around the machinery. I gotta pick up all the trash that's falling around the machines and stuff, but you know, if I didn't do my job well, somebody is going to trip on some of that trash and fall headfirst into one of the machines. And the machine's going to grind them up, right? And the product's going to turn out pink, and nobody's going to want to buy the product. And so our quarterly report's going to look like hell, and our stock prices are going to tumble, and our overall capitalization is going to go to hell in a handbasket. We may be delisted because our capitalization is too low, blah, 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 right? This is the idea of self-aggrandizement, right? Making our job look more important than it might actually be. And it can easily happen. Very easily happen. So be careful about biases here, particularly from these two people. Okay. So as we do this, we gather up this bucket, right? Bucket of information about people's views of what this job is all about. Right? And we look at it initially to sort of screen out the duplicates. So they all say, if every 10 people have said, well, we got to keep the soda machine stocked, well, it may be an important component of the job, but we don't need 10 people telling it. So we will boil that down to a definite, right? If we only talked to 12 people and 10 of them said stock the machine, all right, it's part of the job. So we got to go through and sort of sort out what's real and what is more duplicate. And then we have to put it into some order, some usable order, since people are going to be using this. The performance appraisal people are going to use it, compensation people, legal team, et cetera, are all going to use this, not to mention the people who are hiring for these jobs. So the job analysis then has to be put into usable form. So in that particular situation, I'll show you. Let's make a list of all the things you have to do in your job as student, okay? If you're a student, this is your job. What are the things that you have to do? I'm asking you, as job incumbents, what does being a student mean? Well, I have to. I need a list, a substantial list, so let's keep them coming here.
Study.
Okay.
You have to read.
Stay awake? Yeah, always a problem.
Go to class. Be proactive.
Hmm?
Be proactive in general.
Proactive attitude, maybe. Also, group projects would fit in there, too. Got to be proactive for your group projects. Make it happen, because everybody's going to want to go to the beach. What else?
Need materials.
Hmm?
Materials.
Materials that you might need, and that includes, of course, machines, et cetera. Now, think outside the classroom. Sustenance, right? There's always a bigger word that you should use. Sustenance. What else? Sleep.
Right. Well,
that's a shorter word.
Recuperation.
There we go.
All right. Now think outside the obvious stuff to, well, I'll just make a statement here. If you don't follow this, you won't even be here tomorrow for the next class.
Great.
Good point. I can't mark it wrong. But what am I talking about here that you have to do? Follow. Follow what? You want the first letter?
What's the second word say?
Requirements. R-E-Q-U-I-R-M-E-N-T-S. All right there. If you can read it fast enough.
I could do it.
Just let your... academic. I'll put here academic. But what else would be here? What other requirements do you need to follow? Legal. Let's stay legal here, right? What are the requirements? You can follow all the academic requirements. You can do all that stuff, and you won't get your diploma.
Financial requirements.
Pardon?
Financial requirements.
Okay. I'll put your money. What else? You're starting to be in the right area. We've got a whole damn building over there with this. It's huge.
Oh, conduct.
The jet building.
Oh.
John E. Thomas, jet building. What's in there?
Administration.
All right, do they do anything, or do they just sort of sit there and take up space?
Well,
that depends on your viewpoint, right? Do they make life easier or harder? But I'll tell you right now, if you don't follow administrative requirements, you won't be here tomorrow, or you won't graduate. Oh, we got your diploma for you, but you owe 35 cents to the library. Are you getting it? Are you getting your diploma before you pay that 35 cents? The answer begins with an N. No. How about your PE requirement that you forgot? One unit, right, that you cannot make up by running around the gym in your cap and gown, right? That doesn't count last minute. You got to go to a PE class that you forgot all about. Quoits or Skittles or something. Is that the one where you pull the string and that little thing shoots through the box and knocks things over? Is that Skittles?
What?
Mm-hmm. Skittles is green and animal? I know it's a... No, man, it's like a box the size of this table. And
yeah.
You stand at the end and you yank this dreidel type of thing. It's like a top. And it shoots through the doors and knocks little... There's like little doors and partitions. And it goes through and knocks over these like little bowling pins. You've never seen this.
Uh-huh. Sounds fascinating. Man.
It's pretty much fun when you're a little kid. Granted.
You
probably you can make them. They're cool.
Big kids.
All right, so that's maybe that was your PE class that you did. Fencing, right?
Basketball.
Pardon? Yeah, I wish they used to have squash courts here. Then they put administrators in squash courts. So that's what I played squash. Okay, so this administrative stuff is really important. It has to do with money, courses, fines, etc. All kinds of stuff that you have to do in order to graduate. Because it ain't going to happen until you do that. Try getting a parking ticket and see how long you can live on this campus with a parking ticket. pretty soon this huge wrecking ball falls from up above and hits your car, and that's it. Okay, my point is we have a whole bunch of stuff here, just like our basket with X's in it. How are we going to organize this? We're going to organize it into categories. And the categories are known as major responsibilities. The major responsibilities are supported by the minor responsibilities. So we could have a major responsibility, M-A-J-O-R, responsibilities would be past classes, let's say. Another would be extracurricular. That includes eating and sleeping in my book here. Then we would have things like academic requirements. In other words, if you've taken the right classes, administrative. And then under that, we would put all the rest of the stuff that can be tucked into this. So this is the major. So past classes would be those papers, tests, attendance, polishing my car, you know, that kind of stuff. Good luck in finding any paint. I'm not sure there is any anymore. It comes off really fast if you get a cheap paint job. I'm making it last 10 years come hell or high water. Then you could have, you know, so that's a list here of stuff that you might be able to not do. This is the way I think about the minor responsibilities. You might be able to not do it and still get through with the major responsibilities, but not always. But it sort of shows that there's like a less demand for these here. Can you pass a class without going to it?
Yeah.
Oh, hell yeah. Right. Anthropology, University of Pennsylvania, 1965. Three times I went to class. First midterm, second midterm, and final. That was it.
So damn
boring. But actually, it turns out it's kind of interesting now. What about the extracurricular stuff? Then you would list all the stuff like clubs, sports, survival, food, etc., renting a place, etc. Academic requirements would be like your major. Did you get enough credits from your classes, etc.? And then administrative would be all the stuff like pay. Oh, yeah, then pay. Probably another one would be pay. And in summary, I guess I would just say pay. Those are the administrative requirements right there. So what we have here, then, is a list of the major responsibilities and the supporting minor responsibilities. And what this does is help us, then, with these particular details, all of them in here, writing papers, blah, 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 you know, paying for all this stuff and, you know, doing all these things. It would help us in a work situation understand a job, what the major responsibilities are, the minor responsibilities associated with that, and as we go to hire people or do a performance appraisal or pay them or whatever, we would use that as the guideline for the best person or the best performance appraisal that we could use, et cetera, et cetera. So everything we do needs to be anchored in job relatedness. You know, what is job related? Well, job related is how well does the applicant fit the job analysis. Then we're hiring somebody based on the job itself. You see what I mean? Not that they happen to be our neighbor's son or whatever it might happen to be, but instead it's how well they're qualified to carry out the major and minor responsibilities of a job that we've job analyzed. Got it? All right, go home. Just be careful over the damn weekend. I want to see every butt in the seat all the way next Tuesday, right? No accidents. Everybody be careful. Yes, Dr. Fox, we call you.